Hello, I'm Asha Nayaswamy, and today I'm talking to my friend Navashan. And for the third day in a row, we're at the Kameno Island Ananda Farm in the Pacific Northwest. Navashan, much of his spiritual life took place in the Ananda Palo Alto community where I live, so the colony leaders have a very proprietary relationship with the Dem.
And still does.
It still does. So we use the phrase, he serves at our pleasure at Kameno Island, bearing in mind that this is only a joke.
But I don't know. I was told I'm on assignment officially.
So Navashan has been there with Haley and Zachary, who those of you who are watching every day can watch, to study about gardening and the kind of special farming they do. And perhaps, assuming God wills it, Ananda Palo Alto has a wonderful farm to be developed, and this is our plan. We'll see if God has the same plan that we do, but we all like it. So, my friend Navashan, tell me a little bit about who you were before you became Master's disciple. Where did you grow up? What kind of a child were you? What were your interests?
Oh, I was a gem. I was the...
Well, I think it's what your mother thinks.
Everything the parents would want a child to be. actually, no, I remember the first remarks my mom sharing about when I was first born was that I was this ugly looking thing coming out, just very alien looking, jet black hair and these beady eyes and just crying up a storm. And yeah, so I guess a little bit odd at the very beginning.
Were you the first born?
No, I have an older brother, about almost 2 years older.
You know, a mother said to me that my friend, who was her second born, if he had been the first, he would have been the last. So anyway, there you were. You were this alien.
Yeah. And I apparently just cried. I was a big crier growing up, especially in the young years. But I can even remember all the way up until middle school, just having that as a major part of my life, some kind of frustration and sadness. And looking back, a lot of it had to do just was with my relationship with my brother and my own personal nature or desire to have an independent space and have quiet and peace and quiet. And he, by nature, was very restless, very much needing a lot of stimulus. And so that naturally was a conflict between us two. And so a lot of my childhood was this resistance and this sadness every time, knowing every day we were probably going to have to butt heads and have some kind of confrontation, stemming from good nature, but just that, I guess, more natural instinct of mine to be quiet and independent and have my own space, and his not that. It was just a lot of sadness or frustration or anger around that, and that carried on for quite a number of years.
Master said sometimes people incarnate in one family, and his awful phrase is to fight it out at close quarters.
Uh-huh.
So to just get through karma between you. So you took one of those incarnations, huh?
I think so. I had no concept of I'm receiving this because it's mine and karmically it has come to me. So at that time, it was just a big feeling of unfairness and why does this have to happen every day and going on. But now the amazing thing is, after coming to the yogic teachings and our path, almost immediately after reading about and experiencing that truth of karma and reincarnation and the reasons behind all this, almost at the drop of a hat, had no ill grudges or held any kind of personal grudge or bad feeling towards any of the perceived slights from family members at all. It was just like completely clean slate. Oh, I know why this happened. So that was a blessing as soon as I came on the path.
That is a really enormous blessing. So you were a frustrated child constantly. Mm-hmm. You wanted quiet and you were invaded by this older brother.
Uh-huh.
Is there anything else notable, or did that consume your whole childhood? Did you have any...
It felt all consuming, but I'll add my name to the long list of young boys and girls, I guess, whose outlet was athletics, and really found a nice avenue for happiness through athletics. And just looking back at it now, it was just moving all of the energy that had an inherent good feeling to me. I didn't know why I liked it. I just enjoyed having the physical body to master in whatever sport it was, whatever athletic endeavor it was, and the focus and the concentration that it brought. Uh-huh. I didn't understand it then that that's what I was really looking for, that kind of one-pointed focus that you get when you're really immersed in something. Uh-huh. But understanding back now, I realized that was a huge part of it, is having an inherent sense of joy coming from that kind of a focus and concentration.
That's very interesting. You mentioned that your frustration lasted all the way through middle school. Did things get better when you got into high school? Or?
Yeah, our family, at that time, my mom had remarried, and my stepfather was from the Northeast, and so we moved from Las Vegas to Western Massachusetts, where my stepfather had grown up and had family ties. Uh-huh. And so my brother was also with us when we moved, but he was only there for a year before moving back to Las Vegas to be with my father. And so that was sort of the clean separation that I needed, of feeling like I had personal space to be my own person and to not have this kind of underlying tension always around.
Right. How very interesting. So what did you do as your own person besides athletics? Were you thinking about life, or were you just growing up without much?
Yeah, at that point, no real interest caught me other than athletics up until towards the later end of college. So I was really enjoying my time with sport and athletics, and having that independence from my parents enough. My mother especially was super supportive of giving me space and letting me find my own way. And at that time, it was just being with my peers and mainly through athletics.
And was there any spiritual context to your upbringing? Was there any church going or?
Uh-huh. Yeah, my mother's side of the family is from Mexico. And so she grew up with the Catholic tradition. And as we were young boys growing up, that was also a part of what we had to go through, was going to church every Sunday, and catechism and all of the organized parts around a young person getting First Communion and all that, which I went through the motions of it, the formalities. It's all very vague because I was just doing it, but really was regretting it and just not at all. It was a source of, I guess, that at that time, I was holding that grudge of why you're taking me away from what is giving me happiness and putting me amidst people who don't know what they're talking about.
It's really impressive how many people who end up on the yogic path just found church just like beyond irrelevant. Did you have any awareness of Jesus as separate from the church, or was it just all one uninteresting package?
How it was presented, it was all tied together. And uh-huh. But even though it was all tied together, I didn't necessarily hold a grudge against Jesus. It was it was kind of clear how the people who were teaching just had no clarity in themselves and in the teachings. And so I don't think I made a distinction between the two, but I certainly didn't have a particular grudge against Jesus himself.
Well, that's yeah. Good. I'm sure he appreciates that.
Yeah, I was certainly put off towards religion, organized religion in general, up until, I guess, when we got to high school is when my mother decided that we could make our own decision in terms of going to church and all that. And so there was a pretty clean break.
So it was Sunday morning sports after that, huh?
I guess so, yeah. Uh-huh.
So I meant, you know, outside with the basketball or whatever it was.
Yeah, just trying to be outdoors.
So you mentioned being outdoors. Did you have a particular interest in the natural world or nature or anything like that at that period of time?
Not during that period. That came much later. I remember even my dad, when we would spend time with him and he would visit. I remember one time he took us to Muir Woods, took me to Muir Woods. I think I was back from college for maybe one of my first years. Mm-hmm. And he enjoyed nature, but he was big into heavy metal and rock. And so I remember driving around Muir Woods, listening to rock music in his car and just this contrast between the two. But even then, I thought it was beautiful, but I had no inner attunement to or connection, strong connection with nature. But I did like being outside in general, but not like nature parks or that kind of outside, just outside. And yeah.
So you went to college? Where did you go?
I did go to college. I went to college in North Carolina at a school called East Carolina on the eastern part of the state. Uh-huh. And yeah, my only criteria was at that point, I knew sports and athletics was the only thing that I found any kind of fulfillment in. So I was thinking I would pursue that as a career. So I just chose to be in a location where I hadn't been before, because at that point I had lived in Las Vegas. I had a lot of family in Texas that I would visit often, and I'd been to the East Coast for the high school years. And I eventually began to enjoy exploring different areas of the country that way. And so my criteria was, okay, I'm going to target a school in the South that has to have a good sports program. And I just enjoy the accent and the weather. The weather had to be hot. So it was very, very superficial criteria.
Oh, God just uses our own desires to put us where we're meant to be.
Yeah.
So what did you study? What was your interest when you got there?
It was a sports study degree, which was quite broad. It covered professional sports as well as recreation and leisure that a lot of small towns would develop for their communities. And it was just a wide spectrum. But ideally, my hope was to get into professional sports and work in that kind of a setting. But I just chose as broad a degree as possible just to have my options open.
Right. So I you're not a very tall man. I mean, you're a slender fellow. And I remember when you and I talked, you told me that basketball was your favorite sport. I perhaps inappropriately pointed out that you were not a very big man.
Very appropriately.
I remember that you looked right at me and you said, but nobody gets past me if I don't want them to. So I presume you didn't imagine yourself as a professional athlete, but you just wanted to bring the world around it.
Yeah, the environment, I knew fairly soon after that. Well, again, it was my only perception that was the only thing, sports environment was the only thing that was going to make me happy. So whether as an athlete or just in the environment, I was going to try and just be around, because that was really the only thing that grabbed me. And so it was only after getting an internship in a professional sports arena that I realized that it was actually the physical playing myself that brought a lot of happiness, and not the environment or anything about the environment or the organizational aspects of sports. And so, yeah, that was a quick understanding of, it's actually not sports in itself. It was the physical movement and the energy moving in the body and using that as a way to master my energy. And so,
Did that cause a crisis for you when you realized that?
Not a crisis, but certainly an active approach in trying to seek something else. Yeah, towards the tail end of college, I was interested in mixed martial arts at the time. My brother had become a professional mixed martial artist, so we had sort of that tie in common, that interest. And I began to stumble across some people who were in that world who began talking about consciousness and their experiences with particular plant medicines and shamanism and different kinds of practices that opened up a whole new world. And that really spoke to me, this idea of consciousness, because again, at that point I had gotten to a place where I was seeking and knew that there was something beyond just the normal day-to-day stuff.
And how did that realization come to you? Did you just gradually grow into knowing that the world as you saw it wasn't everything? Was there a dramatic moment, or did it just grow on you slowly?
It didn't feel dramatic, but it felt very clear. It's like, oh, sports, I thought was the only thing that made me happy. Now I'm in a sports world working there. I'm not happy. So it was pretty, it wasn't like a hard thing to discover. It was just very obvious to me at that point.
So what happened next? So you get in the martial arts, and martial arts starts dealing with consciousness. So when did Yogananda enter the story?
A roommate of mine in college, he was still in college. I had already graduated, and he was taking an Eastern philosophy or Eastern religion class, and knew by at that point, I had been generally searching for something else for the last year and a half. And he had the Autobiography of a Yogi, and he suggested that I might be interested in reading it. And so at that point, he just gave it to me, and I fell in love.
Fell in love just that fast?
Yeah, I'm not a reader, hardly read anything growing up. But that book I just read constantly while I was at my working job, because in baseball I had a lot of chunks of the day where I wasn't doing anything. It's during the off season, and so that's what I had fell into in my job. But Autobiography really got me through a lot of it, and I just read it and read it and read it, and that was the next step.
So then after that, how did you get from Carolina to California?
So I tried signing up for the lessons via online through Self-Realization Fellowship, for a couple of weeks, I tried to have some kind of communication to get these lessons, but it just, something wasn't happening. I wasn't able to get them somehow. And so it was only a couple of weeks of trying that before I just started online search for Yogananda and meditation, and Ananda came up. So I immediately went to Ananda's website and began to explore and saw all of their free resources by Swami and all of his books that they had listed, at least a handful, as well as yours and Davies at that point, and just was rifling through all of those, easy reading and feeling like it's the only, I guess in romantic relationships, when you find your life partner, I guess that's the only way I can relate to it, how people might understand it. But I had never had that feeling before of knowing that these are my people and these are mine, and Swami's mine and Yogananda's mine, and they're who I am and who I want to become. And so it was, that was the next step of finding Ananda online, reading the books, and calling communities to see if there's any openings for me to live near.
And then you ended up in Palo Alto. I know. How did you end up with us?
I was applying to jobs in every city that a community was in, that our communities were in. So I applied to jobs in Palo Alto, in Nevada City, in Seattle, Portland, everywhere. And it just so happened that I ended up getting a job in the Palo Alto area, and called Chidambar, who was Rick at the time when he answered the phone, but the community manager in Palo Alto, and asked if there was any openings in the community. And there wasn't at that time. So I just moved 20 minutes right across the bridge to the East Bay. But that's how I made it over. But it was essentially through searching for jobs in every community and landing one in Palo Alto.
That's fantastic. I'm so glad you did.
Yeah, it took wasn't quite Swamiji's day or two after reading the AOI, but I felt a certain responsibility inwardly to finish out my job, my professional season, because there's a lot of turnover. And so it wasn't expected that I stay year to year, but it was strongly suggested that I stay if we're in season to finish out. And it felt right to me to do that, although my heart was certainly already moving towards Palo Alto and the community.
So fasting forward, you came and you lived in our Palo Alto community. I know you eventually quit your outside job and came to just work on the Sangha, just home job and church in one place. But now, either by your choice or by serving at our pleasure, you have you've gone to the Kameno Island Farm. And so tell me why you made that move, what you're thinking, what's important to you about what you're doing there.
Yeah, I sort of fell into it because, again, I had no particular skill sets growing up, no particular interests outside of athletics. And so everywhere I've been growing up and every job I've had, it's generally been kind of like an assistant to whoever, just helping them do better, whatever it is that they do. Mm-hmm. So even when I came to Ananda, I had no real idea of how I could best serve, but I knew I just wanted to serve and serve this work and serve Master and Swamiji through this work. And so I was able to begin. Shanti, who was the church manager, or is still, asked me if I could come on to do anything. Really, I didn't really know what she had in mind, but it started off with teaching meditation, since that seemed like a obvious thing to at least plug into. But I was learning tech skills from Dumbara, who was there, and he was operating all of our sound equipment and some of the video stuff. So I just began learning all these different things that you learn at Ananda, because we have so many different outlets to and areas in which we serve, and each one is its own. You could learn a whole bunch about any one of them. And so I just started to learn a little bit in almost all the different arenas. And eventually, 2 years ago, I somehow went to Santa Cruz with a friend and hopped into their bookstore and came across this book on companion planting and gardening. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why it spoke to me, but just how it was written, how it was laid out, very friendly, very quirky. But something about it spoke to me, and I wasn't necessarily even looking for it, but at that time, I was just trying to follow the energy, and there seemed to be a lot of energy around it. Again, sometimes there's just these pockets of feeling that come up around a certain area that leave you with a sense of feeling that you hadn't felt before. And this was one of them. I just thought it'd be smart to follow it and follow up with it and see where it might lead. And that quickly led to the person who was taking care of our church grounds, our temple grounds, not being able to do so anymore. And so that's when I was asked to try to serve and fill in that arena. And I really began to tune into nature and the teachings, our teachings, and how it applies to nature and how we can be stewards of life in that way through nature. And so I just was trying to really see how you could apply these teachings into that specific arena and was falling in love with it and seeing a lot of benefit come from it. And then the idea came up to visit Kamehameha Island for a longer chunk of time to learn some of the things that they're doing here that are a little bit more in tune with our teachings as applied to agriculture and nature. And prior to that, my own idea was we have a farm in Palo Alto in Half Moon Bay that I think would be, could really be something. And so it just felt like a natural thing to immerse myself in the spirit here on Kamehameha Island, less so the actual techniques of the gardening, but the community building aspects more so. And then when I come back to try and serve the farm there in a meaningful way.
Can you tell me, what is it possible for you to summarize how our teachings apply to cooperating with nature? What ideas come to you when you think like that?
I think cultivating life in everything, that's how I am at least right now approaching it, and how I am able to, that's the question I ask when I move throughout the day. How can I bring more life to this area? And I know Zach was talking, or maybe it was Haley, mentioning about the traditional agricultural methods where you're just stripping life away from the land and you just see the effects of what happens when life is taken away. And I was really impressed at how, of the reminder of when Swami talks about people like Bharat and Dana, of how they've taken their natural interests and applied our teachings to them and created this whole new avenue of how we can spiritualize these different aspects. And so that's how I'm trying to view farming and agriculture, is, and the question that I'm able to come back to is, how can I bring more life into this particular practice? And it just comes with all kinds of ideas. And I'm totally new in this arena, so I'm finding things out of actually, how can I bring life to this? And most importantly, it's in my own life in me. How can I be alive every day? And then that'll manifest into particular things and models of agriculture. But more and more, I'm realizing that it can be agriculture. It can be if I'm back at the Sangha teaching meditation or doing tech stuff. If I'm alive inside, then that's really the only thing that's worthwhile. And it doesn't really matter the form it takes. And so while I love agriculture and I love this arena, I'm totally aware of it's what I bring to it that's making it what it is, and that'll make anything lasting. So yeah, but I'm totally all in right now in terms of this particular model of agricultural and natural farming. Uh-huh. And what it can do for us.
What is natural farming? I heard Haley use that same word, natural farming. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
A lot of observation of how nature works by itself first, of mm-hmm. a lot of like the forest floor, how you build it naturally by itself will build its own topsoil without any intervention. You know, you have the falling of the leaves when the wintertime comes, it mixes into the soil. You have all the life of the creatures in the soil just continuing to compost it. Mm-hmm. And so I think natural farming as a whole is a lot of observing of how life is prevalent and how the human hand can assist it without being detrimental. But it definitely is a working relationship, because I'm very aware also that you see and you hear Swami talk about, you know, the wild forest and how, you know, if it gets all wrangly and pretty mangy, you can get, you know, cannot feel all that good. So there is a reality of working hand in hand, both mm-hmm. what the person can bring and their consciousness and if it's uplifted, and also what nature can naturally do. So I think it's natural farming as a whole is a combination of seeing how nature works best on its own and then trying our best to see how we can also help as people.
I think all that's just really splendid. You know, in the very early years of Ananda, growing food by the biodynamic method was what it was called at that point that we were following, was just fundamental to life in the community. To a certain extent, we've moved away from that a little bit. I mean, Ananda as a whole, but that was always part of Master's very fundamental idea for community, is that you'd be self-sufficient, you would grow your own food. So would it be fair to say that that's kind of like an aspect of Master's work that you've picked up that sort of feels like yours for the time at least?
Yeah, it feels so. I mean, it certainly feels like it's definitely in tune with the teachings, as long as we continue to, you know, tune in consciously and see study and introspect of what would Master say about this and what's the principle behind what we're doing. And if we're tuning into the particular principle, then I think we can express it in any number of ways. But if we're solid on the principles, I think if that's the foundation, then it can take any kind of expression.
I'm going to just flip to something else, because the other great talent that you've shown is that you have a beautiful and very natural singing voice. Is there a union in your mind between the music and the working with nature? Do those come together for you?
Yeah, absolutely. The music, more than anything, I would say, is my connection to Swami and Master and the path. Uh-huh. I that was the first thing that I would do when I found Ananda and the music collection. When I would drive to work, I had about a 45-minute commute. I would just play Swami singing and was so amazed that this kind of music even existed and its effect that it could have. I think the music connects me to every aspect that I'm involved in. So, but the music is the rock that no matter what I'm doing, I'm generally always coming back to the music in some way.
I want to talk for a couple of minutes, just I'll give people some information. And Swami Kriyananda, the community of Palo Alto, where you lived for a time, and it is in an urban area. And Swami Kriyananda was always very concerned that we didn't have a safe haven is actually the phrase he used, because of Master's predictions that there might be social disruption. And virtually the last communication we got from him before he died was, you really need to get land in the country. And he died in April, and in June, we started the process of buying this farm, which is 45 minutes from here near the coast. But in all the years that we've had it now, it has developed nicely, but it hasn't had a mother yet. I mean, a devoted mother. We've had a lot of people work on it beautifully, but its potential has not been realized. And I know we were talking before we came on the air that you feel a particular relationship with that. Do you want to speak about that at all, how that feels to you?
Yes, I think at this point in time, where I wouldn't have been able to say that before, but it feels like it's coming from the inside out. Mm-hmm. I think when I first plugged in to the community, when I moved to Palo Alto, the first thing I did, I think, was plug into the community gardens with Amara and everybody there. But I think even at that time, I was still coming from outside in. It was something I was doing and enjoyed doing, but I didn't feel a particular affinity to it. But now, ever since a couple of years ago, when that feeling did come about then from the inside out, I think that was my inspiration to start moving in that direction, is just being aware that we did have a farm, we did have a lot of potential. And so my focus now is trying to be immersed in this vibration here, because on Kameno, just because it's so established and you just feel the life here, that I want to be able to do our farm justice in helping create and helping manifest through hopefully a team of people who are starting to feel the same thing. Which when I was first mentioning to different people that this was looking like a real possibility that I could start moving to our farm full time, there was a lot of interest and people wanting to start plugging in more. And I think with world circumstances happening now as they are, I can only imagine it growing, that that sense. And I've heard that there's been a small group of people throughout the last couple months helping out a little bit more frequently. So yeah, my hope is when I get back there and towards October-ish, that we'll really start to ask Master what he wants for the farm and try to do our best to serve.
Right. And I'm shamelessly, openly, without the slightest hesitation, advertising the possibility by bringing it up to you in these years.
Well, it's interesting, you know, because we have our emergency preparedness group that has been thinking of different ideas and ways to prepare for hard times over the last couple of years. And I'm still wrestling with that idea of simple living, basically, is what the emergency preparedness is.
Right.
But it's being viewed in the context of emergency preparedness. But whereas we shouldn't wait for an emergency to be living this way necessarily, why not just start moving in that direction so that when emergency does happen, there's no real difference in how we're living. So, but again, there's still that, I'm still feeling out how that fits in with urban communities and rural communities and how to blend the two together. But I think how we have it set up, where we do have our farm really close by to our urban community, where we can just be all tied in together, it does seem like it could be a very nice model.
Well, I hope and pray that it all works out just as you're feeling it as and I'm feeling it, and that all those who are feeling it also from the inside will be called to join. Navashan, it's just a pleasure to see you again, and really a pleasure to talk to you. And
you too. I look forward to coming back if California lets me back in.
We'll let you back in, yes. Right now you can't, but eventually we'll smuggle you.
Yeah, okay, good.
We'll smuggle you back
in. As you said, I'm slender, so I could fit in a few different areas.
That's exactly right. But in the meantime, blessings on everything you're doing, and may Master guide you and deepen all of your understandings.
Oh, thank you.
It's a joy to speak with
you. Good to see you again.
Very good to see you too.